hear from you what you think peace is. Because everyone always says, we want peace, the world wants peace, I want peace of mind, give peace a chance. But does anyone know what peace is?
Liberation, sorry?
Liberation. And what is that? In one sentence?
Peace.
Okay, we're back to peace again. Do you have any idea what peace is? To be happy in your mind. Okay? And you?
Non-conflict.
Just someone write all these down. They don't have a pen and paper. We should have a whiteboard here. Do we have such? Okay, on the whiteboard, write all these entries into the peace contest. And we'll try to see if we can have peace. It'd be nice to get a bigger one day. Okay, first is happiness within your mind. I'll leave space for everyone. Second was non-conflict. And the third, I say, pass. Yes? Yeah?
Harmony.
Harmony.
Unity of heart.
Unity of heart.
Loving with unconditional love.
Unconditional love. To know where you belong, to know your purpose and your role. Can we put that? To know your purpose and your role. Silence. In the back there?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. But we had non-conflict there, is that okay? Well, that harmony there too. What do you think? See if you can put it into another word. Well, guys are veterans here, I'll skip over. You want to have a go at it? He's from Nepal. What's that? What's that called? What's one word for that? Understanding someone's problems and acting for them. Sympathy is a stronger one. Empathy, yes. You know that English word, empathy? Okay. And you?
Acting from position of love.
Is that deal with unconditional love? No? And you?
I agree with empathy.
Empathy. And you already said liberation, right?
Constant mind. Constant mind. Constant mind. Constant mind.
Yeah. Do me a favor and see if you can coin another word for it.
Prison.
Alright, we've got unconditional love.
Oh, goodness.
Alright. Over here? What do you say? Wholeness. kid in the back, what do you say?
Peace-lex.
There must be one word for that. It's more than tolerance, huh? It's peaceful acceptance of everyone. Huh? Kind of like, you do your thing, I'll do mine. You don't bug me, I don't bug you. Or each to his own.
And coexistence.
Coexistence. Like what people do in relationships after the romance wears off. Huh? When they're still trying to pretend they're not going to get somebody else. Yeah, what do you say?
Oh, harmony.
I haven't even got that. And you?
You also surrender to God.
I surrender to God or whatever. Okay. Put God in parentheses with a question mark after God.
One question mark.
Oh, I'm adding that. I have to add something too, you know? You guys going to do all the talking? Within the parentheses, the question mark is there. Okay. Now, what to do? Happiness in the mind. Is peace happiness in the mind? Well, why is the mind so important to us? According to Bhagavad Gita. Anyone here has read Bhagavad Gita? Yeah. Anyone else? Everyone's heard of Bhagavad Gita, right? Yeah? Mm-hmm. So in Bhagavad Gita, it's described, Krishna describes, that not only are you not the body, but you're also not the mind. The mind is a covering, just like the body is a covering. And you change bodies according to your state of mind at the time of death. Whatever your mentality is at the time of death, it brings you to the appropriate next body. But neither the body nor the mind are the actual person. They're not the soul. They're coverings. The body is called the gross covering. The mind is called the subtle covering. So, from the Vedic point of view, happiness in the mind is like the Wellington weather. It comes and goes, but it's not you. That's like saying moisture in the air. What does moisture in the air have to do with you? It's just something in your environment. Similarly, the mind is not you. It's just your covering. And that covering, known as your mind, accepts various environmental influences, like happiness and distress, just like the air accepts sunlight, rain, fog, snow, like that. So if we actually understand transcendental knowledge that we're not the body, we also know we're not the mind. When Krishna says you're not the body in Bhagavad Gita, he's not simply referring to flesh and blood and bones, he's also referring to the mind. Sometimes some people, they call psychics, they can see people's astral body, you know. Or some people say they can see auras. All that is related to the subtle body. Either they're seeing the subtle body or they're seeing the traces of the subtle body. So, how can happiness in the mind be peace? Just like, how can dye in my clothes be peace? Okay, these clothes were originally white. They're from India. And now, because they don't have any good dye in India, they've been dyed in Auckland. So, I could instead of saying happiness in mine, I could say saffron dye in cloth. Now neither have any relation to the real self. Saffron dye and cloth, happiness in mind. If you can understand your identity is separate from the body and mind. But of course, few people accept that in their activities. More will accept it as a theory, but few actually know how to act in that way. Next. Oh, is that all right with you? Okay. So some possibilities there? Yes. So, what is the real essence? The soul. Now, how do you make the soul happy? Alright, we'll save that one later. She says she tries to make the soul happy by getting a connection to... God, you know, whatever. Okay, non-conflict. Now, why is there a conflict in the first place? Then we can understand how peace might come from non-conflict. So you're saying we may not know where it comes from, but at least we should stop it, right? Yes. How can we stop conflict if we fail to understand its root? The root cause of all conflict is our identification with the body and mind, and then our false consciousness fills with passion based on this misidentification with the body and mind. Our false consciousness fills with passion, and we start making and changing plans for material enjoyment. The conflict begins as soon as you identify with the body and mind. That is the mistake, and anything coming after that just furthers the same mistake. Just like in an intricate mathematical calculation, if you make a small mistake at the beginning, everything else is affected. So the real conflict is that we misidentify with the body and mind, and then based on that false knowledge, we're filled with anxieties for material pleasure and anxieties about material distress. And then we spend our whole life making and changing plans, trying to ward off happiness, you know, ward off distress and attract the happiness. Can you see your day going on like that? All day long, from the time you wake up to when you take rest, you're beating back distress and you're trying to pull the happiness to you. It's a real conflict. Because there is no conflict, it's thinking you're something you're not. You're the body and mind. So how can there be non-conflict or peace amongst persons who are deluded about themselves? Sometimes when you're walking... you're walking home, and I don't know if they ever, it should happen sometimes in Wellington. Maybe they have a very effective dog catching department, but sometimes there's just groups of street dogs barking at one another. Does that happen sometimes? Or they're immediately scooped up. Anyone ever seen like a group of street dogs fighting? Huh? Or barking, not fighting, just barking at one another. Yes. Now, did you ever think to go into the middle of that group of dogs and say, "My dear dogs, let there be peace"? Anybody ever think to do that? Huh? You try to do that. No. No. Peace. No. Make peace amongst them. By getting right in the midst of the dogs and saying, my dear dogs, let us be peaceful. Anybody ever here tried that? Why not? Why didn't you try? He didn't honor them with that much intelligence. He knew they're just dogs. They have no knowledge. So why should I waste my time, right? So similarly, today's human beings, what's the difference? Do you see any intelligence in today's human beings? Huh? How? Okay, give us an example. Surviving, the animals are doing that better. The animals don't pollute the environment. The animals don't ruin their habitat. The animals perfectly know how to live in balance with nature. Not by any intellectual knowledge, but by instinct. Still, they do it.
So they do it by not living in the mind.
That's another subject matter. But still, how are human beings different from animals today? How are human beings showing intelligence? When animals fight, do they threaten to destroy the whole planet? Do animals get neurotic about their mating? They have to go to a counselor or study books or... No. They have to worry about, do they get abortion?
So you can get
No, no, no. I'm just asking you for signs of, what are signs of human intelligence?
Some intelligent ones see it most, maybe.
Oh, well, that's different. According to the standard. I know, dogmatic. According to the standard of, well, what was I supposed to say, you know? I couldn't read this. you'll excuse me? Okay. Okay, then, but then you tell me. Maybe I'm wrong. Okay. Or you can tell me. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm being, what, too...
Well, I think you're generalizing.
Okay, all right. All right, I'm ready to hear.
But how many people...
No, wait, one at a time.
You can't say this about the whole entire population of the world.
Okay,
it's
then...
generalization.
All right, so, fair enough. Now, you please give me an example of some intelligence. we're not making anything personal.
No.
We shouldn't generalize, or we shouldn't make anything personal.
I have never threatened to blow up the planet. I do it. Never. But and there are some, it's more like there are a few powerful people doing these really fucked up things.
Wait a minute. I actually, no, only one at a time. Otherwise, this gets real out of hand. You want her to do the talking?
No, she wasn't.
Wait. So who should I respond to?
How many people are actually, like, on the planet absolutely non-impact? How many people don't actually take away from the planet or leave pollution behind them or actually leave something that is good?
How do we know what's good?
Healing stuff. Uh-huh. I mean...
What's that?
Healing something, yeah. Cleaning out pollution. Yeah. Well, I can say I'm not that intelligent. I'm actually really stupid. I still buy stuff in plastic containers. I still sometimes don't recycle stuff not there. All levels. It's probably more laziness than stupidity, actually.
But, okay, let's take it from the environmental point of view. how do you know that you're perfectly interacting with nature? Do you understand all of nature?
I think we do have the intelligence to know.
To know what?
To know how. We do have the technology and the intelligence.
Technology?
To know how to go. Well, that's about the only thing, you know, plus a real strong spiritual belief and spiritual community globally. Like, technology can say this as well, and that's where our intelligence comes in, but there's, like, hardly anyone... Hardly anyone actually doing it. Like, when anyone comes up with...
Are you agreeing with me, then? Even from your point of view, there's hardly anyone intelligent?
Oh, yeah, I don't think there's anyone... anyone in this room that I think is absolutely non-impact on the planet, I'd be amazed. I'd take my hat off to you and I'd go get one, but I'd be amazed.
How do you judge what's non-impact on the planet? You may... You may not buy any plastic bags, but does that mean you fully understand every one of your actions so that you can see I'm not causing any impact? No, this cannot happen. Bhagavad Gita will explain to you that every action has a reaction. Now, you might just deal with the reactions that you are aware of, but you're just seeing a tiny bit of the total bunch of reactions. Just like a little kid. Anyone here have a little kid? Yeah. Now, you know the problem in trying to take care of... How old is your little kid?
A year and a half.
That little kid, it acts like it understands all the possibilities. But you're going to be in anxiety, especially as it gets near three. You're going to be in anxiety that, you know, you don't know what you're doing. You have to listen to me. Little kids, they think, well, I should stick the knife into the PowerPoint. I should walk out into the street. It all looks like pleasure to them. They think it's just all natural. But you're in complete anxiety because you see more reactions than what the kid can see. So where is the limit? Even as so-called adults, we see very few of the total reactions happening to us. Just like you take a rock and you throw it into the pond and there's, we call them ripples. Someone more scientific would say, what, concentric circles or something? Or what? So, when the ripples are no longer visible to your eye, does that mean the reaction has stopped? No. It goes on and on and on, far beyond what you can see or hear. Similarly, how can we actually tell what is good based on our limited senses? We have to have overall knowledge of everything. Otherwise, can you imagine her one-year-old child, one and a half, telling, Mom, I know what's good. You would just laugh, right?
She may know what's good in her mind, but she may not
know what's good in your mind.
The whole thing,
But does Mom know the whole thing?
No.
All right, so how can Mom say what's good?
Because I don't.
Oh.
Well, this is good for you.
And this is good for me.
And this is good for me.
So if it's good to you, it's good for you. Go for it. And this is supposed to bring about peace, huh? How many think this attitude will bring about peace? That you do what's good for you, I do what's good for me, and just let it all go on like that.
Well, this impact stuff, we can't...
Wait, one thing at a time. How many think that will bring about peace? Do you?
I think it's good for you.
Okay.
The idea is good. Mm-hmm. I think we do have the just good. That's where it's within our limited knowledge. So you can tell it's good for us, and seeing reactions from other people, we can tell it's good for them too. And if we both think it's good, well then, there's no world to function. I mean, it is limited within what you're saying.
Right. So my point is, even accepting what you're saying, that you can do limited good. I don't argue with that point. But
we work with the limited tools that we have, and for that we need to be able to do it.
Right, what you don't know won't hurt you, right?
But you can always ask and you'll get what you know.
Ask! Who do you ask to find out the overall good in every circumstance? Who do you ask? Your postie?
No, you could meditate, but I'm not that good at it.
Meditate on what? Your navel? I'm just being facetious, but I'm making a point, you know? It's easy to kind of say these things, but you get what I'm doing now? It's easy to kind of say things without kind of getting to the root of it. So we don't know what good is, really. We're just trying to cope, you know? Adjust from day to day. And generally, you know, if it feels good today, well, it probably is good. And the same thing tomorrow is painful, well, then it's probably bad. But we don't have any overall picture of what's going on. So how can we decide what is good and what's non-impacting? How far does your vision go?
Some people have an instinct about what's good and bad.
Has it been working, me? Have you seen signs that the instincts of the people, it's working?
Sorry, no goodness, no ignorance, and
no brother. But I'm not getting into that right now. Okay, so you have to be patient. So, basically I'm pointing out, how can we understand how to act if we have no comprehensive, all-encompassing knowledge? We're bewildered. And we can see in human society that, generally speaking, animal society works much better as compared to human society.
Okay. All right. If it's the case that God or whoever he is, why did he give us a brain? Why are we, have we got higher intelligence than animals do? Why aren't we just still in the primal world?
Wait. What?
Sorry.
It's your karma. As soon as you talk, someone else has to add something on. You see, they're impacting on you. They won't let you make a non-impacting statement. And for them, it's good. You get my point? So, you mentioned, why did some strange word you used? What was that strange word? Whatever, yes. I like whatever better. Why did the whatever give us higher intelligence? Well, what do you think? You can play God or the whatever for a day. But how can you take responsibility without knowledge? That's a very dangerous thing.
But you're just God doing the animal kingdom of business and friends.
Right now, if the human...
My argument is you're contradicting yourself. All right. Right, we can't do that without knowledge.
Right. But if so my point is, it's not contradictory. If the humans have no overall knowledge, then you're right. What's the use of their being humans? They become worse than animals when they spoil or neglect their gift of higher intelligence.
So what's the use of animals?
Oh. Go down to Burger King and ask them. They'll tell you. Right?
No, they don't tell it.
Yeah! Animals are for munching on. Yes, we think Burger King is. Animals in between the buns, you know? Yeah. You didn't know that? What do you think they serve down there? What do you think they serve down there? Animals. Yeah.
So they're all living for us, plus.
What's that?
So the animals are all living for us, plus.
Some people say that. You go to many churches, they'll tell you, God gave the animals for us to eat.
Or they say, God gave us mission to God over the animals.
And God over them means that when they're tasty, we eat them.
So,
wait. I can only do one thing at a time. So, why are the animals here?
Because we'd be lying when we're out.
Are we be hungry without them?
No, it would be lonely. There wouldn't be a balance and everything.
You wouldn't have a pet dog?
There wouldn't be any fish in the sea. There wouldn't be animals. The trees would have, like, you know, just some of the woods.
And for the animals, they wouldn't be here. I mean,
it wouldn't be life.
They wouldn't. It's all part, we're all connected. We're connected to the plants, we're connected to the animals.
We're talking like our human beings.
Our point, remember, is we're trying to understand and grasp the essential difference in behavior right now between human beings and animals, and we're having a tough time.
Yeah, because we're also affected.
Huh? So, the point I was making is that there cannot be peace as long as human beings have no self-knowledge. And I'm implying a further point, which some are picking up on, that the lack of self-knowledge, as well as comprehensive cosmic knowledge in human beings, brings about worse behavior than the animals. When humans are ignorant, they cause more destruction than animals. But you can accept that. Or?
All right, so.
How about most? What activities of human beings today do you see that are bringing about good, even though we don't know what good is? Suppose you're hungry, and I bring you a nice package from Burger King. No, this happens all the time. Suppose you're hungry and I bring you a nice little baggie from Burger King. Is that good? All those who say it's good, raise your hand. One. No. Wait. What's that?
If the person eats meat, then it'll be good for them.
If the person eats meat, it's good for them. It's up to the person.
Yeah.
Okay. You agree with that? I'm getting back to you, don't worry. You're hungry, and I bring you a bag from Burger King. Now, he just said, if you eat meat, it's good for you.
Yeah, from their point of view, that person.
But
the person's eating.
You hear what he's saying? All right. From your point of view, in other words, if it's good to you, it's good for you. It's all up to you. Uh-huh. What's that? Don't impact upon her statement. It's a matter of how you perceive it. It's all up to you.
I don't think you can compare what I just said, someone handing someone a package of food with him.
But I'm doing charity work for you. You are hungry. I'm bringing you a package from Burger King.
But the act is good for some ramifications on it.
How can the act be good?
It's good attention and it puts on the immediate need.
You need food. So I bring you Burger King. Now he says, if the intention is good, then... But... Suppose you break the law, you don't know what the law is. The judge will tell you, ignorance of the law is no excuse. You have to know what you're doing before you act. Human life brings about the responsibility. It carries with it the responsibility to know what you're doing. And ignorance is no excuse. When you have the human body, that automatically brings with it the responsibility to know what is what. To know who you are, why you're here, what your purpose is. To understand your relationship to the complete whole, not just your little ecosphere, your little neck of woods that you live in. No, you have to know how you relate to all of nature, the whole cosmos. That's far beyond what you can understand with your limited senses. So unless you take knowledge from an ultimate source, you're not going to find out what to do. I'll give another example. I think, where is it? In Russia now, they're having an outbreak of tuberculosis. And the tuberculosis there is resisting the antibiotics. Especially since the people there taking the antibiotics for it, and then as soon as they get a little better, they sell the antibiotics on the black market, the rest of their batch. And which means that the disease develops resistance because it's not being wiped out. As soon as they get a little bit better, they feel a little bit good, then they take the rest of their prescription of antibiotics the government gives them and sell it on the black market. They go, oh, I'm well, so now I want money. Now, when you have tuberculosis, you're not supposed to eat. You're supposed to eat very little and in very special ways. Suppose you're in the hospital with tuberculosis, and I come into the ward and I see it, you and all your friends not eating, and I just had a big banquet at KFC. And look at these people. They're just laying there, and the cruel doctors have not allowed them to feast. I know what's good. I shall bring them all food. I'll call up KFC, and I'll have a whole van of what some people consider food brought over. Now, what I do that, and afterwards, what do you think the doctors will say to me? They'll be very angry, yes? And what will I say? I'll give his answer. It is the intention of the act. No! No! Wait, just think deeply about this point. Think deeply about it. I could be wrong, but think deeply. It's a deep underlying point. You have to know what is good beyond your intentions. Otherwise, I would kill you with good intentions. You understand? I'm feeding you with tuberculosis. That means I'm killing you with my good intentions. You understand? So, as a human being, you're supposed to have more than good intentions. You're supposed to have knowledge. You know the expression, the path to hell is paved with good intentions. We need knowledge. Otherwise, how can we tell what is good and what is bad? How can we see the whole scheme of action and reaction? How do we know what's good karma and bad karma? But how do you learn by your mistakes when you can't see all the havoc you're causing? You can't see, for example, how your present actions are leading to another body. But what makes you think nature is going to accept that excuse? Excuse me, don't put me into that kind of body in my next life because, you know, I was just doing the best I could.
You gotta find out what you got.
What you got?
Yeah, to find out from. About like to get this knowledge. And, you know, like when you're a little kid, you know, you got your parents and stuff, and if you go to school and you got more that you can take the knowledge from, then you may, discover a higher power, which you can get knowledge from as well.
Now, what real knowledge did you ever learn in school? Oh, one of those generalized statements. Anyone, can you tell me some real knowledge you learned in school? Yeah. Did you learn how to make scones? Okay. This is the eating department.
And I am a human being, and this lifetime so I do need to eat myself. Is that any
God? Okay, so eating. They taught her how to eat, how to cook.
I could go on and on and speak more.
Yes, in one sentence. What good did you learn in school?
How to act and perform and play sports. Which you probably knew anyway.
How to act, perform, and play sports. Oh, this is, you know, we're getting into very...
Oh, hang on, time's table. I know how to add stuff.
Ah, okay, we're very precious now. Okay, anyone else? What did you... Yeah. No. What did you... Oh, you learned. Oh, I'm sorry. You learned how to question. You learned how to question. Did they ever teach you to ask, who am I? No, did they ever say to you, in this course, we are going to try to understand who we are? No, we're not talking about intentions or aims. We're just talking basic, did they or did they not? They said, young man, today we're going to discuss, who are we? That means, are you the body or are you something else?
Yeah, I think they did that in many ways. In some scientific ways, the spiritual, the Christian stuff, the biology, all that, a lot of it relates back to you and the social studies programs.
Did they in school say, we are going to teach you the difference between matter and spirit? We're going to discuss whether your identity is material or non-material. No, this is not a viewpoint. This is just basic, stuff, Are you this or are you that? Did anyone in school ever say that to you? Are you matter or are you not? You're impacting on his statement. So, we're still trying to hear something that you learned for real in school. Really running a risk tonight, making all these heavy statements. She's not angry at me anymore, she's starting to smile. Yes, but I hear from him every week, so I have to give others a chance. For 1 year. So I have to,
I learned another language or some other languages. And also I learned karakia to incarnation, to prayer. So that is good,
You learned, what was the last thing again?
Karakia, it's a Maori term, Maori word in New Zealand, but it's to acknowledge the higher beings.
No, that's certainly a start. Okay, to acknowledge, any intelligent person acknowledges higher control, because you can see in every aspect of your life you're under control. If you can't see that, then it's hard to call yourself a human being. If you can't see that you're bound up by control at every moment, from birth to death, you're controlled. Does anyone here not feel controlled?
Yeah, if I was controlled, I wouldn't be here. If it was fully somewhere else, I wouldn't be doing the same things I'm doing. I've got free will to,
Okay.
Drive a car.
Now, you used to be a little baby.
Oh yeah, okay.
But
yeah, okay.
Could you control not growing up?
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, you could point out to the expression of independence in these minor areas, but in the main arena of your life, you're completely controlled. Now, yes, I'm going to wear a red shirt today instead of my purple shirt. And you call that a real manifestation of self-expression, huh? But in
no,
the...
I call it a plain shirt.
No. You're expressing yourself. Today it'll be the red shirt, not the purple shirt. But in the most important things, you're completely bound up. You had to get older. You have to get sick. You'll be an old man.
I don't think you have to get older or have to get sick.
You know him? You know him?
No.
But you're just doing good for him. You're doing good for him. She's impacting upon you in a good way.
No, she's giving me that. I don't. I think if you were like him. This is,
it's all the intentions.
Physically, we should be able to live you've got the means when you're born, maybe not straight, but then a few generations to live for, you know, 750,000 years. So I don't think you should get older quickly. I was forced to grow up, yeah, in the society that I was in.
But,
so I think
but stop your old age.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I heard a story.
And stop.
Wait. A woman who's here has gone from grey back to starting to get darker.
But she's still getting older. Time is moving on.
No, I think she's reversing. Well, she claims she's reversing.
Well, I'm your mother. I would claim to be about anything, you know.
Okay.
I gave birth to 5 kids yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
You can claim anything, you know?
But it has to be by steering through technology.
Anyway, the point is, in the major areas of our life, we are completely controlled, but we like to point out minor things as an example of our independence. But any intelligent person will see that they are controlled by higher power. But no one has any understanding of what that higher power is. Now, Bhagavad Gita will explain that as soon as you identify with the body and mind as the self, you lose your intelligence. And from that point, everything is problematic. Everything is bewildering. So if you can stop this problem of misidentifying with the body and mind, then you have a chance to start to see real knowledge. But as long as you are identifying with the body and mind, your head is swirling with misconceptions. And you can't see the forest for the trees. You can't understand who you are. You can't understand what God or the whatever is. You don't understand higher power and the source of the higher power. Everything is murky because of this bodily conception of life. So from that initial mistake, all the mistakes follow. And in that way, you can't do good. And you spoiled your human life because there's no intelligence. Oh, now she's looking away. Oh, there you go, Swami. Off the wall again. Any comments from this end? I thought you were someone I knew whose name was Jean. What do you think? Is it possible to do good without knowledge? What about when I went into the tuberculosis ward in the hospital? I had good intentions. Why don't you accept it as good? I mean, she died because I fed her, but still, I was doing good, you know? It was good food. She was relishing the KFC stuff before she died. That was good, right? No, you don't agree, huh? Okay. In order to do good, you have to have complete knowledge. You're a little kid, this little kid here. When he thinks he's doing, she thinks she's doing good. Maybe when she sticks a knife into the PowerPoint. This is a nice slit, and it's meant for me to stick the knife in. This is how the house works. And the mother will freak out completely. Or suppose you're walking down the street at night alone. And some young men think, she's lonely, we're going to do her some good. Yes, but you can only gain, very good point, you can only gain the overall knowledge from the overall. Which brings us down to the last point here. The big question mark. What is the overall? And how do we get to know the overall? Not to speak of surrender to the overall. I mean, that's strong stuff. You know, we don't surrender to anyone or anything. Except our senses. So, does anyone here ever have the inkling that we might be surrendering to our senses. Did you ever think you were talking about that?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Can you elaborate on that? What do you mean by surrendering to your senses?
Well, just based on what I said, you.
Can you define it? Define.
Anyone else? You ever had some inkling that you're surrendering to your senses?
Sure.
Okay. We'll define it later, but I'm just trying to get an immediate reaction.
Drugs.
No? You? Yeah?
I have no idea what it might be like.
What's your language?
Swedish.
Uh-huh. How do you say in Sweden? Uh-huh.
Hi, baby.
No, this is like, mm-hmm. I used to live in Sweden. But if you were in Sweden, you wouldn't be this outgoing.
I don't know.
When Swedes leave the country, when they go overseas, then they become very outgoing. But in Sweden, you know, everyone's very, you know.
I would speak up in a meeting, but...
You know. So, surrendered to your senses. Accepting the dictation from your senses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No. Animals follow their instincts, but human beings can actually just, in spite of their higher intelligence, they can just do whatever their senses tell them to do. Eyes, ears, tongue, touch, smell, and your mind too. According to Bhagavad Gita, the mind is a sense also. Are you trying to say there's no difference between humans and animals?
Well, we are animals, yeah, in a way. So I think we're a bit different from what we generally call animals, but we all live on our senses.
We all have surrendered to our senses. Huh?
We work on and surrender on it. Well, I'll prove myself. So
okay, I accept the last statement. Anyone else? You feel like sometimes you're just surrendering to your senses?
Are you telling me you don't?
You're
asking me and I'll ask you.
Okay, fair enough. But after we hear from everybody else.
I think I have, but I don't think you have control over it. It's like a direct relationship with the spirit that you, for me, it was a surrender where he, I guess, surrendered to him rather than to you.
But I'm just talking about surrender to the senses. Do you sometimes feel like you're surrendered to the senses? They're just pushing you around? Anyone else? Do you feel? Yes? Alright. Over here? The surrender to the senses? So, for those who are wondering what this means, surrender to the senses means that you're under the control of your sensual urges. The tongue wants to eat this or drink that. The eyes want to see this or that. The skin wants to feel this or that. The ear wants to hear certain things. That's what it means to be under control of the senses. You cannot control your senses according to a higher plan. Society doesn't teach this art. Today's society is catering to uncontrolled senses. The more uncontrolled senses you have, the better it is for the consumer society. When you want to make money off people, it's best that they have no discrimination. It's best that they're just subject to whatever flashes on the screen of their mind. Buy this, do that, touch this, do that. That's what it means to be surrendered to your senses. But to be able to control your senses means to discriminate according to a higher plan. Even though my senses are telling me to do this or that, with my intelligence I say no, because in the long run it's not the best thing. Just like this baby. Babies can't discriminate. Whatever they get, they like to first stick in their mouth. The tongue sense is so powerful. An adult is supposed to be able to discriminate. But how can an adult discriminate when he or she does not know what is good? And how can you know what good is when you can't see every situation and you make so many mistakes? Yeah. Oh, yeah, with your question.
The surrendering contingency, what you just said about the contingency, I hardly agree. The loss of control, but I still think, I think the implication you're making is that that is totally bad. And I put it to you that you surrendered to your senses, otherwise you'd be dead, because you wouldn't remember to eat. That's a sin.
You know it's good.
We're talking relativity here, and I don't see that that's a bad thing, but
personally, I never talk relativity, otherwise I'd be wasting your time. You don't need to come here to hear me talk relativity. That goes on everywhere. Yeah, it doesn't matter what you do, you know. If it's good to you, it's good for you.
I'm talking in relation to each other. It's agreed.
Let me say that you're supposed to rule your senses with your intelligence. You're supposed to know how to control your senses according to a higher plan. So Krishna will explain in Bhagavad Gita that first there are the sense objects. Higher than the sense objects are the senses. Higher than the senses is the mind. Higher than the mind is the intelligence. And higher than everything is the soul. So the intelligence is the next door neighbor to the soul. Now people have no idea of the soul and they don't know how to use their intelligence. Therefore they're easily, therefore they're easily victimized. And you can't blame society. You put yourself into a state in which you can easily be exploited because you don't know how to control your senses. So how can there be peace? If I don't know who I am, whether I'm matter or spirit, if I don't know what is good in every circumstance, I only know what limited good looks like to me. And if I don't know how to control my senses, I don't know how to practice discipline, then how can I say I'm a human being and how can there be peace? These sentiments that just have a good intent, just be loving, these platitudes don't work. Unconditional love, what does that mean? Who said unconditional love? What does that mean?
To love as in spirit realms.
Uh-huh.
To love as in spirit realms.
As in spirit realms, what? No, just give us a practical example from everyday life. How do you show unconditional love? Has anyone ever shown you unconditional love?
Yeah. Okay, if someone does something really bad to you, you know, you'll hate the fact that they did that. Or I don't like to use the word hate, you dislike what they did, but you still... And you may attack them just defending yourself.
Oh, you may attack them just defending yourself, but it'll all be in love.
Yeah, but you still love the person.
While you're attacking them.
No, while you're defending yourself. Attacking, defense, and hate, I mean, they're all pretty strong words, but you know what I'm saying?
No.
Okay, well, say someone hit you by a car because they were drunk. You'd hate the fact that they were drunk driving, but you still love the person.
Now, how do you love them? How do you
just happens.
What do? You just go up and thank you for running me over and give him a hug? What do you, I mean, I'm just being serious.
Okay, it's a state of soul then, if it's not a state of mind.
A state of what?
Mind, but I know I won't get away with that. So it's a state of soul.
And what is the soul?
Well,
can anyone here say what the soul is?
Elimination of Krishna.
Yeah, a little bit.
What's that? what is that?
Elimination of Krishna. I would have said it in totally different words because this is the first time. Yeah.
Does anyone here know what the soul is? What's that? What you see when you say I. What do you see when you say I? Any other, any more definitive answers? Oh, wait. Yeah. What about our, my friend here? What the soul is, the individual thing? So every... But there has to be a standard definition. Now, if I... So everything is up to the individual. If I say it's good to carve up your face with a knife, that's okay. And if you... No, this is for real. No, it's not out of context. Try to understand. Who is the judge of what is good? Who is the judge of what is real? I'm making a very practical point. What do you say? Who is the judge of what is good and real?
Again, on different levels, I think that we have an individual, we make judges ourselves, and then collectively in society, people between us, we decide who is good.
How big is the society? How big is the society?
You can have more like a family level, the level of what's good within the family, then the community level, then the national level, then the international level.
Okay, so even on the family level, is there agreement in families what's good?
Ultimately, there's a lot of conflict and things to generate in that often.
And what are the statistics for families staying together these days?
Probably
pretty poor. Yeah, so obviously we have trouble agreeing on what is good in the family, what to speak of nationally, internationally, but the amount of human beings on this planet are tiny compared to all the other creatures. And that's just one planet. We don't know how many planets are on the universe. So how do you figure out what's good? Even if you can establish what's good in your little family, which is a big job these days, even if you can establish what's good in the city of Wellington, it's a big job. Even if you can do it all in New Zealand, even if you can do it over the whole world, still you're just dealing with a speck of dust in the cosmos.
So we say we don't bother, huh? We lay it away and all stand paralyzed and don't do anything.
Yeah, that's what we do here, exactly. We should find out the source of all energy and take our knowledge of what's good from there. That is the purpose of human life.
No, that's a good point.
If you read Bhagavad Gita and put it into action, then you can see. First of all, you must admit it's completely unusual to take information from a source that says everything emanates from it. So just that claim puts things in a different category. You would never say you're the source of everything, right? Okay. So that automatically disqualifies you based on that practical humility, right? That disqualifies you from presenting yourself as having all-encompassing knowledge, right? And we all, if we're sane, we'll take the same position. We don't have anyone here who says, I'm moving the sun, I'm moving the moon, I am the cause of everything. Do you have anybody here like that? Alright, so that means we're acknowledging we are tiny. We're limited. So why shouldn't we try to get knowledge from a source that says, I am unlimited. We can only try. But isn't it better to gamble on a source that says it's unlimited than try to get knowledge from someone we know is limited? Huh? If I say, what is your name? Mark. Mark, when you want to know about, when you know everything about New Zealand, you come to me. I'm the expert. What would you say?
Well, I'll put it so I'd rather deal with a known, but, and with known limits, that you might get some good out of stuff that you know, than just a lot of things that I know.
Yeah, but if I say, Mark, you come to me, and I'll tell you everything about New Zealand. I know all about it. What would you be thinking?
If I wanted to to know something, and I knew nothing, I think you're better than knowing nothing. And I might find out later it's wrong, or you might screw yourself in the telling, but then I might get something out of it. Maybe you don't know it all, but I get something out of it. So I come to you.
The first thing you think was, well, I can tell by your accent that you haven't been here that long. I mean, you do have a faint American accent. It's still there, but it's faint. So therefore, I would be a little suspect that you know everything about this country. And I would probably, if I had a choice, go ask someone who I knew was born here and who was acquainted with everything since birth.
Well,
just an ordinary example.
Well, then if I met someone who claimed to know everything, or some sort of everything, I'd view it even more stupidly than I'd view you. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, that's another angle. So you're saying that anyone who says they know everything, they any kind of entity that says, I know everything, has got to be mistaken.
Well, the example you just gave would mean you would seem to be illustrating, you know, you're a skeptic and you don't give them any credit for it because you think they don't know. But then you're talking about doing it on a bigger scale. And you only not believe your example, but believe a bigger version of it.
So, if...
Confused.
No. If you can read Bhagavad Gita and Krishna says, Mark, everything emanates from me. Now, would you say, no, it doesn't? You say, Krishna, I don't believe it, right? What would you say?
Yeah, I think you would say that, but I'll be prepared to do this bit of it.
Oh. But if you say, no, Krishna, everything doesn't emanate from you, that means you have some knowledge in order to say no. You understand?
No, not at all.
If
you can say no to a lot of things you have knowledge.
Well, human life means you can't do anything without knowing if you're actually using your human gifts. So this is our basic point again. There can't be intelligent activity without knowledge, and as a human being it is your job to get the most comprehensive knowledge possible, and that is the basis of Krishna consciousness. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, everything emanates from me. Here's the process by which you can verify that.
What are we doing in the meantime till we get this Krishna knowledge?
Suffer.
You still have to make.
Suffer.
True. But we're going to take the interest, deal with less inadequate knowledge to build up this knowledge.
And suffer.
Yeah.
Either you get the knowledge or you suffer.
Well, you work towards it and do both. You gain knowledge and you suffer. And hopefully you suffer and you get your knowledge first.
Yes, if you get real knowledge, then your suffering stops.
See, if
so better to learn through your own doctrine, huh?
Well, actually,
and if it comes from you, it's not doctrine, it's the real thing, huh?
I know that I'm supposed to be a bit of an expert, so I shouldn't go along with that.
But if you are not the complete whole, you agree to that, right? You're,
I agree.
Okay. That means you're a part of everything, right? So if the complete whole can give knowledge, why would you call it doctrine? Right. That from which everything emanates defines what reality is. You can't actually define what reality is. You're a tiny thing.
What can you?
I know, I can't either. But I acknowledge that reality is defined by the Supreme. But I don't call it doctrine. No worries. So therefore, this is conflict. You see, this is a conflict. And this is the conflict that Bhagavad Gita deals with, and unless you can deal with this conflict, there's no peace. The real conflict is between the living entity and the complete whole, between the soul and the supreme. That's the real conflict. We don't want to have our reality defined for us. We want to do our own thing, and therefore we have these bodies of matter. and we're trapped in a world of time and space because we want to do our own thing, separate from the complete whole, separate from Krishna. We want to be the reality definers. If I think it's good, it's good. If I have a good intention, it's good. And all we're doing is suffering, but we don't want to look at that. I had a good time last week. I had some good moments in my life. I've had some good times. There's moments when I felt love. Look at it the other way. How cheaply we get bought off by temporary material pleasures and pain. Last year, I was happy even for one day, you know? Don't get me wrong, we've had a few good times in our relationship. I mean, sometimes things really clicked. Living in this material world means we allow ourselves to be bought off so easily by some trinkets. Right. We should go for the ultimate treasure, which is full knowledge. But for that,